You are listening to My Art Broker Talks. My Art Broker connects buyers and sellers of blue chip prints and editions, specializing in original prints and multiples, in particular pop, contemporary, and urban art. Hosted by Charlotte Stewart.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, Charlotte.
Right, today, Matt Capasso's incredibly great newsletter, Art Investing Worth the Trouble? Is the art investing hype justified, or are we just chasing a mirage? I think that you actually brought this to my attention, Erin, and I think I was traveling back from work listening to it in the car, and I got very overexcited. And we've had a lot of conversations since then. And I feel like it's just, something that we want to share, because these conversations are just really relevant and topical and exciting for our listeners. Yeah. So we're gonna go through Matt's newsletter and just look at some of the advantages and disadvantages, aren't we, today?
Yeah, so we're looking at whether art is worth the trouble as an investment. And, you know, while Matt and also Jerry on their podcast Arts Mac, which I'm a huge fan of, had so many valid points when it comes to the primary market, we've got quite a lot to say when it comes to prints and multiples on the secondary market.
I will stress that this isn't a market for people that are looking for a nice, solid, steady investment. This is a market for people who enjoy the art. You have to enjoy the investment angle of it.
That's why we call it a passion asset, after all.
Exactly. And, you know, there are models like, for instance, fractional art investing, which allows you to play that game a little bit more like stocks and shares. We don't do fractional. It's about 100% ownership. You get to take the artwork home and love it and appreciate it. And so, you know, there's a different investment going on there. Let's talk about disadvantages.
Matt's disadvantage number one, art is illiquid. Fine art is highly illiquid, making collections difficult and time consuming to sell in a pinch.
So, yeah, if you're looking for if you're looking to be able to liquidate your asset really quickly, there are much better places to go. However, I would argue that if you buy in the right market, it's not the case at all. I think one of the things I'll mention here is that when you have a, if you've got, let's say you've got £500,000 to spend, and you go out and you choose to spend it on an emerging primary market artist. Mm-hmm. First of all, like, good luck, but enjoy. Okay. So buy it because you love it, but don't consider it a tradable investment. I think there are people that do incredibly well, and there are obviously galleries that you're in a much safer space with by buying an emerging artist through them.
But I think the gamble you take.
It's the gamble you take. And you know, the cost of winning buying something at primary that you've also loved is fantastic. And there are lots of people that did that. I mean, you know, I don't want to dwell on the Banksy market too much, because we always do. But, you know, there are people that spent £250 on, you know, at a Bristol market stall who were students, and actually 250 quid was a huge amount of money to spend. And they bought for passion. They bought on the primary and they cashed in, you know.
They're laughing now.
They are laughing now. But, you know, the point is that they didn't buy it as an investment. Like, you know, there might be a handful of people that said they knew. I mean, you can't know that kind of thing. No. The difference is with prints and multiples is if you have £500,000, and, you know, caveat, we are not financial advisors. You can buy across an extraordinary breadth of blue chip, era-defining artists in the print space.
Yeah.
So let's say you were to invest that £500,000 in artists from Hockney, Hearst, American Pop, Warhol. You can actually buy a breadth of artwork, and the markets don't play at the same time. They have the ability to do very well in some areas and and correct themselves in others. So if you have a diverse portfolio of not just assets, but also artists and artworks, there are areas that you can liquidate relatively easily. If you invest in one particular artist on the secondary market, you're taking a much bigger punt that that artist is going to accelerate or hold its value at the same rate. So there are really strategic things you can do, and collectors quite specifically do, in order to allow themselves to cash out when they want to. And then the other thing I would say is that if you're using auction houses which have auction dates, you are quite restricted to when that auction is going to go through. Particularly, and again, sorry, it's a Banksy example, but you know, at the top of the market in the beginning of 2021, Sotheby's, Christie's, and Phillips and Forum, they all put on these Banksy only sales, and they flooded the market. You can't consign 10 stop and searches into one auction at the same time. So what you have is the ability to get rid of it, but nowhere to sell it until maybe a year, 18 months later, when the market has dropped. What we've always done is being able to meet that need, which is take the artwork on and sell it immediately to the network of buyers that we have. Our consignment window is much smaller. And if we don't have a buyer for it, you're not tied into a contract with us.
We're not going to burn your artwork either.
No, the artwork's not going to go through a public auction and not get sold, because the reserve is still set where it was a year ago.
Yeah. Matt also says there is no centralized, efficient exchange like the New York Stock Exchange plays for stocks. The sales channels for art are highly fragmented and market prices remain opaque.
The art market is historically incredibly
Yeah, we can't argue against that.
We can't. Like, it is. It's massively so. You know, and it's an unregulated market, as they say. I think that one of the things we've launched recently is the trading floor, which does have immediate associations with the stock exchange. But really what we're doing there, in the very simplest terms, is we're picking up our network supply and demand, and we're putting it on the front end of our site. So you can see in real time how many people want that work, how many people own that work in the network, so therefore we have access to it, and how many pieces we actually have available for immediate sale. So I can't really say fairer than that. I think that's a game-changing piece of technology.
Exactly. And
whilst there are a lot of people doing a huge amount of work in terms of data and being able to track the market in an incredibly brilliant way and across much larger section of the market than prints and multiples, there's no one else picking up their intel at that level. And, you know, allowing our specialists to say, look, I can see what you can see. Yeah. I don't know how we could make it any more transparent without getting into GDPR. The point is that this is the network, you belong to it. It's currently completely free to access, which is another one of our sort of key values around it. As soon as we gatekeep that, as soon as we put that behind a paywall, and by the way, we have talked about that. We're not solving the problem for people, because it becomes an elitist space that you have to be a member of.
Exactly, because it's not just about transparency, it's about access to that network. You're no longer having to wait and see what happens on the night at auction. This is something that you can kind of take your time over, wait for the best time to sell with a broker by your side.
And I think the thing is that when you talk about transparency in the art market, what you're really talking about, I'd love the definition of transparency. What you're really talking about is, how as a collector am I offered all the information that I really need at my fingertips? And there's kind of almost three things in there, isn't there? There's supply and demand. So, you know, how much demand do you have? You know, why should I offer my work via you? Oh, we've got buyers. Well, we've either got buyers or we haven't. They're sitting on the front of the website. How much supply have you got currently? Because I don't want to be one of five people who are offering this. Well, that's sitting on the front of our website. So supply and demand. Secondly, cost. How much is it going to cost me? that's what, you know, people, we're actually at the stage where it's quite difficult to convince people that the price we're giving you as a net return for your artwork is the price you will receive, because people are so used to expecting there to be fees. And I mean, this is a business. We make a commission. We have to make a commission, or we wouldn't exist. Yeah. We make a commission off the buyer. It's less than auction. We cover the fees within that. And the reasons we can do that is because we're just in a more efficient business than one that has to look after the bricks and mortar of a major gallery on the high street. Yeah. So you bring it to us, we'll sell it. If we don't sell it, it comes back to you. There are no unsold fees.
And it's untarnished.
And it's untarnished. And that's the, that basically alleviates that feeling, I don't know that I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
Put that more eloquently, I'm sure, Erin. you don't know, or whatever that expression is. And I think that, so it's cost, it's supply and demand, and then it is specialist knowledge. And there's specialist knowledge associated with the artwork. But in many ways, when you're somebody who's collecting at this level, you know the artwork. You know, one, you've fallen for the artwork, or you know that artist. There's a reason why you're deeply invested in that artist. The passion from a collector to a specialist is something that, you know, we're not removing through just becoming an online platform where you click and you buy. There's a personal relationship that happens there. Yeah. But the piece that you need is the specialist market knowledge. So that's why we spend all our time creating creating content.
We mean all our time.
All our time creating content like this, which is through education around the market.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else there is left not to be transparent about, actually. I'd love to be challenged on that. I'd love it, because what we would do is then build something that says, you know, and by the way, I will caveat this with the fact that you can only really do this in the prints and multiples market. Like, it's very, very difficult to do it outside of the prints and multiples
market. Imagine doing it in the originals market. So Matt's third point, he says, the sales process involves significant transaction costs such as commission, shipping, storage, insurance and maintenance expenses. And I think, well, we've just...
I think the only thing, and you know, there are stockbrokers who'll say to you, like, it doesn't yield me anything while I own it. Like, it's not like property can create cash from it. And again, it's like, that's fair enough. I get that. And I think there are, you know, to be completely transparent, there are costs associated with looking after art. Well, you
of
know,
there should be.
And, you know, you're also, please don't mistreat a Warhol print, because
it's a passion asset. You want to look after it.
You need to look after it and pass it on to, you know, the next generation of collectors. So there are some costs involved, and there's a huge amount of do's and don'ts around where to hang it, how to store it. And things like that can actually affect hugely what you will return on it. But again, that comes back to making sure that you're buying it from somewhere that can offer you the expertise to have it framed correctly, hang it in a place that isn't exposed to a huge amount of light.
Hopefully
get the balance right, because, you know, we do have some collectors who tend to store their artwork because of that particular. And then, of course, there's not much joy to be had in something that's held in a
storage facility. Indeed. Most importantly, Matt says, it takes time, sometimes months, sometimes years, to sell a collection entirely. And yes, that's true, but trading floor, access to our network, we can maybe not make things a lot speedier, but we can connect you with that community of buyers and sellers who are interested in the artworks that you have.
Yes. And I think the point is, as much as we meet that need of being able to move something immediately, we're not here to do that. We're here to go, hold your collection in my portfolio, which is, we should just explain, is a two-factor authenticated private dashboard where you can add the artworks that you have. You can calculate your return against fair market value of that artwork in real time. So every time an auction goes through, it changes the the value. You can not want to sell anything, but you can see the opportunity every day. You can see the opportunity and where it lies, and you can actually see the network demand for it. You can speak to a broker with zero obligation to sell that artwork. You know, it's kind of the best of, imagine if you owned property and you could, you know,
yes, on it and wait for it to like be the best it can be before you sell it.
Sell it on a whim, you know, sell it on a whim, because actually you knew there was a buyer that was in the area and looking for a 6-bedroom house on that road. You know, that's the idea, is that we're creating a kind of connected community where the opportunity is always open and the decision making is yours rather than somebody else's, because you made a decision, you know, 6 months ago to do something.
And that's the crucial thing, isn't it? Putting that kind of ownership with our collectors. So the second big area where Matt's looking at disadvantages of investing in art, he says the art market lacks regulation. We've all heard of art forgery scandals. They've popped up quite consistently on Netflix, he says. What do we do to prevent that from happening?
So first of all, shout out to one of the best Netflix documentaries ever made in this area, which is called Made You Look. It's just a rip-roaring tale of how unregulated the art market is. Yeah, the art market is you know, there's a lot, and unfortunately, particularly in our area, Erin, right, there's a huge amount of fakes and forgeries, because there always is if there's the opportunity to make money.
Exactly.
It's something that we have to fight every day. And it's one of the reasons why we have not only our own specialists, but third party authenticators as well. And it's also why we quite often will turn artworks away that may have been sold through reputable institutions before, but they don't come with enough provenance for us. So in the Banksy market, it's relatively easy. We don't sell anything unless it has pest control certificate. And we work in all our markets with specialists in authentication for that particular artist. They're quite specifically third party, because it allows that third party, that unbiased third party, to have a say in that. And we also have different stages of that. So for certain works, we might have a full authentication report done in the same way that we would have a full condition report done. And by the way, condition is just as important in this around this question. You know, one of the reasons why my art broker was founded was Ian and Joey were Banksy collectors themselves. We're talking, you know, 15, 20 years ago, where the stakes weren't as high as they are these days. There was no real understanding of how a work of that level should be conserved and treated, and particularly with works like Banksy's prints, where no one really expected the value to get to where it got to. So it's, if you buy a Damien Hirst print like this year or last year, you know what you're buying and you know how you need to keep it.
Deal with it. Whereas a Banksy print that you maybe bought out of the back of a car in 05 might have been blue tacked to a wall,
shoved under the bed. I mean, some of the stories, like, you know, they're heartbreaking. But, you know, there are also grades within condition, which, again, aren't that transparent. You know, if you came to the market and you were told a print was in very good condition, you would expect it to be immaculate, where that does not mean immaculate. Good condition, and you have fair, and then you have poor. So, you know, there is a grading system around this. And
I mean,
again,
that's called podcast in itself.
And I think, again, that's not really the case in the originals market. There isn't a condition grading system. So I, you know, again, it's one of those points from Matt's newsletter, which I completely concur with. It's just that there are so many opportunities if you want more regulation. And it's secondary market, it's blue chip artists, it's long auction track records, public and private, if you can get a hold of it via us. And it's ensuring that, you know, who you buy through. And, you know, and also, we're always really happy to look at stuff via our third party authenticators. It's not, there's not an extra fee. And, you know, we've got a pretty good nose for these things as well. You know, there are things that you learn. That just, you know, and, you know, I would say if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Like, it's such a cliche, but 99.9% of the time, it's not quite right.
Matt also goes on to say the market is largely unregulated, making it difficult to access reliable information and increasing the risk of fraud and unethical practices.
Yeah, there are safe places to buy, but I think you can get a relatively quick understanding when you start talking to somebody, whether it be online or in a gallery. There are some really clear warning bells. If you're asking for things like condition reports, if you're asking for documents of provenance, if you're asking for close-up images, these are all things that you must and are just part of our process.
Yeah.
If you get to a point where, oh, we don't have that, or there's too much of a delay with that, run away.
So Matt's final big disadvantage is that the art market is volatile. He says the art market is highly cyclical and volatile, with prices fluctuating greatly based on the popularity of artists and styles.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why we work with our artists is because they're the most investable artists. I mean, yeah, that's why we choose them. Look, this one, as we said, like on the primary market, absolutely right. And also, let's not just ignore the correction in the Banksy market, you know? Let's not just ignore the fact that, you know, in 2021, beginning of 2021, end of 2020, the Banksy market was in full boom.
Frenzy. Yeah.
And there, you know, it would not be responsible for me to not say there are people that bought at the top of the market who will not return what they bought that artwork for. I would also say, and we talk a little bit about this with some of our contemporaries within different passion asset markets, that there's not a grading by artist, but there are artists that are a surer thing. And if you choose a very, very contemporary artist, and if you choose an artist that is still active and therefore producing more, the supply... Potentially, you know, if an artist suddenly creates a huge amount of supply, the artwork that's been on the secondary market for quite a long time will probably decrease in value. And also artworks that are incredibly liquid, like the Banksy market was for a couple of years through COVID, you will see a decline. Now, the way to hedge against that is to choose artists that no longer supply because they are dead. and also to choose artists that maybe don't have as much pop culture turmoil. Okay. So by that, I mean artists that aren't massively influenced by major PR scandals. Unless you love that, unless you enjoy that game, you know, which is cool too. Like, you know, we all have different appetites for what, you know, how we want to invest and how we want to collect. And that's what's really exciting, you know, the different approaches.
The things that drive us.
Yeah, the things that drive us and the things that make us happy. We always end every conversation around investing with buy what you love because you're never disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, making money on an artwork is a bonus, a joy. It's not why you do it.
Yeah.
However, what better investment than something that brings you joy and cash? I mean, it's like the perfect job, isn't it, Erin?
Yeah.
First of all, you know, if you had, and we talked about £500,000 to spend, let's say you had a few million to spend on contemporary and modern prints. Wouldn't that be fantastic? I would be spending my money across the board. And I would be spending on some low edition numbers of deeply established artists that have long-term value history. I don't need it to be growth, actually, but I do need it to be long-term established value. And I would be ensuring that I bought something that was in really, really good condition, because one person's condition at one institution is... We can go from being in good condition to being in fair condition, depending on who you're selling it through. which can be very frustrating. So buy the best you can afford, I would say.
Yeah, I'm not getting I'd also just say don't put all of your eggs in one basket. Yes. And prints and multiples allow you to do that in a way that originals perhaps can't. We've got a lower price point to entry.
Yes.
And that allows you to buy across the board of different genres, different artists. And buy what you love. Buy more of what you love.
And then when you've got bored of it, sell it and buy something new that you love.
Buy something else, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we see a lot of people doing exactly that, you know, having collected over a certain period of time, their life's changed, their family's tastes have changed.
Yeah.
And they're moving.
And that's exciting in itself.
Really exciting. I mean, one of the most exciting journeys that we see is collectors who've entered this market via NFTs. And then they've gone, hang on, maybe I am interested in collecting actual art. Baxi seems like a good bet. Ooh, no, hang on, maybe I could buy Keith Haring because he's the original, you know? And it's that kind of backward journey of discovery that I think is really exciting as the market becomes.
And once you wet your eyes right for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And people are able to like sort of find themselves a little bit more educated. I hate using that expression because it's so patronizing, but you know, in the same way that I would need a lot of educating if I was to enter the sports
watches.
I'd want to talk to an expert. I want to understand the market so that I can make my own decisions. And that's where my art broker started, was through two collectors who were like, this market is not fit for purpose. Why can't do these things? And you know, that's where we are now, having built a huge amount of technology, because it was never going to be something that we were going to be able to do manually,
especially now in the wake of COVID, how like online art marketplaces like ours, transparency and access is the watchword.
Yes. And if you just take it online, once you're online only, you do to give people extra transparency, because there's nothing like walking into a gallery and shaking somebody's hand and seeing the art in person. You know, that's how the best buying experiences used to be. And so, you know, we're fully aware we have to give more value than if we had a big, glamorous gallery.
Yeah.
And so this is how we do it. So thanks, Matt, for giving us a conversation starter.
Exactly. So after discussing the advantages and disadvantages of investing in art, Matt then goes on to discuss the future of art investment. And he asks what comes next. He says, if you glance at the websites and public marketing for the new plays in art investing, everything seems hunky-dory. Promises of huge returns and beat the market are abundant.
Yeah. I mean, tell me about it. I think one of my biggest dislikes about this space is there are a lot of people doing something similar to what we are doing, and they're promising to show you a lot of graphs that show like FTSE 500, and then they show you the artist market over the top, and it's really frustrating because it's you can't do it. You know, we have a great piece written by a finance specialist online about how comparing the stock market and the art market is like comparing apples and oranges. And I would anyone who's using that in their marketing campaign, I would seriously suggest take a read of that. I do, however, I do think that it is slightly different when you're looking at the prints and multiples market, because when you buy a print from a series of 800, you're essentially buying a share in a series. I mean, I'm sure that that's quite...
I haven't thought about it like that before.
Yeah, I know. And it is a little bit left of center. I'm sure that you're probably. But from my perspective, you're buying a piece of that series. Yeah.
So
and therefore there is a correlation around buying into something that you cannot replicate in the originals market, because one, you've got historical sales within that series. Two, you know there are 800 other out there, so the fair market value is always going to be at a level with the rest of the series, unless there are condition issues, unless there is particular provenance, which can both improve and lessen a value on something. So there are hundreds of conditions. They're not like for like. You also have collectors who are obsessed with certain numbers, you know, in editions, which I always find
very fun. Birthdays.
Oh no! I mean, fascinating. I only want number one, you know, or number of 16. So there are comparables to the more hard asset markets.
Yeah,
and I was into multiples markets, much like the wine market, the watch market, the designer handbag market, the classic car market. Mm-hmm. These are all, you know, this is why we have a magazine that talks all about this called Edition. They are all editions. They all have one, a sense of community. And it's a different kind of collector as well. And you often see this. There are collectors that collect sets of things that are really kind of on the divide between an original and an edition. Yeah. You know, own a set of matching numbers is like owning an original. It's a very unique opportunity. And when it comes to market, it's a different proposal to the market, because particularly if they're matching numbers, they've been held together. That's very unusual to find, for instance, in the American pop market with Warhol, where prints were just like, you know, kind of shared out at factory parties and chucked in the back of his cars. So there is, it's not that the prints market doesn't hold that unique experience too, but with collectors of prints and multiples, there's a sense of that community. There's a sense of belonging to, you know, in the same way that people that collect wine love talking with collectors who collect maybe the same, and I'm going to show my lack of knowledge around the wine market here.
Don't ask me.
It's the same vintage, but of a slightly different vineyard. There's different conversations that are started by buying into that. So the conversation is not, look, let's compare it to the FTSE 500, look at the massive return you can make. Talk to somebody who understands the market, you know, in the same way that you would talk to when you're buying a house. Talk to somebody who understands that market. Don't approach it like a stockbroker. Don't
be flippant with your passion assets and your collection.
Yeah. And, you know, buy with your eyes and your heart, and just be thrilled when, you know, there is return to have. And if return is important to you, then you might want to look at prints and multiples.
Yeah. And go in it with as much information as you can possibly equip yourself with. So Matt's final advice is pay a great ethical art advisor with access. Hire someone who knows their stuff, is connected, and understands the nuances of the market. You'll thank yourself later.
Yeah, you will.
You will.
But you know, find a model that you don't need to pay an art advisor. Find, if you're fascinated by Bordeaux wines, go to a Bordeaux dealer. If you're fascinated by, because the thing is it doesn't take a huge amount of effort to know that market incredibly well if it's what you specialize in. So this is what I always say about the challenge that auction has, is that auction houses are set up to sell everything from miniature snuff bottles to contemporary art. You think you're dealing with a juggernaut. You're not. You're dealing with four specialists within a department who really understand that market. I'm not saying they're not some of the most incredibly specialist people in the world in that particular market. They are. They really are.
Yeah.
However, there is a cost associated with running that juggernaut, and they're just going to have to charge you more, and they won't necessarily have any more specialism in that market. So I would agree with him, and I'd go further to say, you know, explore these niche areas, decide what you want to invest in, and then speak to somebody who specializes in that area, because a generic art advisor is not, especially if they're a one-man band, they're going to come to people like us, which they do, to find out more information.
And when it does come to the prints and multiples market, we know our stuff. We're connected to a growing network of investors and collectors. So you don't necessarily need to pay an art advisor with great access. You don't need to pay to use My Portfolio, for example.
You don't have to pay to use any of it. The only time And if you go to sell it, you literally pay nothing. And I think the other thing that I would just note is that there's a lot of online platforms where they've shoved it all online, reduced their costs, are giving you data. But actually, when you get to buy or sell, you click a button. And that's it. And so actually, it's kind of on you to have done your research really well.
That would freak me out.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it should freak you out because nothing is that easy. You know, I think there are also quite a lot of marketplaces from some major brands where the artwork never comes into the specialist. Mm. So sell it off their wall, Yeah, and you say it, and I can see Matt's point. Like, you say it's murky, but it's what, without mentioning any major brand names, it's what a lot of these online marketplaces are now doing. You know, a lot of these marketplaces are going, we'll list your art and we'll sell it for you without seeing it, without appraising it. Whereas we don't do that, mainly because it causes you a huge amount of labor when the artwork's not right.
And once again, if it seems too good to be true,
it
just might be too good to be true.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Matt.
That was fun. I hope you don't mind.
Is art investing worth the trouble?
I think it just might be, Erin.
I think it just might be. As long as you're investing in it for the right reasons.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. The fact is, there are a thousand ways to invest these days. Art is just one of them, and you have to enjoy the journey. You know, if it's something that feels like something on your to-do list, it's not right for you. It has to almost be it needs to be a passion project.
Exactly.